The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested in directly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Salnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.
This is the Retirement and IRA Show coming to you from beautiful Northern Colorado. Join us as certified financial planner Jim Salnier, as well as Colorado State University finance instructor and certified financial planner Chris Stein, teach you about IRAs, 401ks, annuities, Social Security, pension plans, and estate planning in a fun and enjoyable show. Whether you are listening live in Colorado or streaming from their website or iTunes podcast, Jim and Chris want you to know that they're available to help you plan for your retirement. Just visit their website at jimhelps.com. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. And click the Meet the Team button on the homepage. Now, here's Jim and Chris with today's show.
Well, welcome to the Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition for this week. On today's show, we're going to talk about 12 potential tax changes in the Biden tax proposal. We've done this before during previous administrations. For those of you who don't know, the president generally floats some ideas or proposals to see, I guess it's to give Congress some ideas, since it's Congress that ultimately proposes the legislation itself. But there's this proposal that's traditionally provided by the president, and it, I guess sets the stage for some initial discussions. So we've got some information about the current Biden tax proposal. One thing I can be sure of is not everything in this proposal is going to come true. That's never happened, and I'm confident in making the prediction that that's going to be the case here. But we don't know for sure, so it's a good idea to keep things on the radar and pay attention to what might be coming down the pike, if you will. A lot of the proposals, the one with the elimination of the stretch IRA, that was in presidential proposals for a while before it actually came to be. So some of these will likely see the light of day. Others will not. So we thought we'd share some of those today. And that, I guess that was a longer preamble than I was expecting to come out of my mouth. But Jim, have I captured the essence of today's topic?
You have. I think you did it quite well. I want to reaffirm much of what you said. I, too, believe many, many of the proposals that we're going to be talking about today won't see the light of day this round. But what I like about these, when they send out these lead balloons that it's lead balloons. I got that one right. When they send out these lead balloons, no.
A lead balloon is one that's not going to fly.
Yeah, don't tell me. It's it's trial balloons.
You go. Mm-hmm.
They send out a trial balloon. So where would I use a lead balloon?
That went over like a lead balloon.
Oh, when it doesn't go over very well. Yeah, okay. So these are trial balloons, folks. And Chris and I have been saying on this show for a very long time, long before the Secure Act, that we thought the stretch IRA was going to go the way of the dodo bird. We also felt the step up in basis was going to go the way of the dodo bird. And in fact, under the Obama administration, he said in one of his last tax proposals that he felt, this is President Obama now, that the step up in basis was the biggest loophole in the U.S. tax code. It's very telling when the leader of a political party is coming out and saying that. So what we have and what we want to review today isn't what Biden's trying to pass. It's what's in the proposal. It's what's on the chopping block, or depending on which situation we're talking about today, it's going to be added to the tax code or chopped from the tax code. These 12 proposals are a mixture of both of those, folks. Some things that they want to remove, other things that they want to add. The net result, they're looking to raise revenue. And what was eye-opening to me as I reviewed what the proposals are, Chris, and especially for our listeners, it really is coming after middle-class and upper-middle-class people. There are some proposals earmarked specifically for the quote-unquote rich, but as we've often pointed out, Chris, before, it's how do you define quote-unquote rich? When Reagan, because we don't want to pick on just the Biden administration and their party, we'll pick on Reagan and their party, or his party. When they first started taxing Social Security, Chris, back in 83, they got it through, or at least placated people by saying it was only going to affect 1% of Social Security recipients. Well, who could be against that, Chris? 99% of the other people said, this isn't going to bother me. What do I care? But the way they wrote the taxation of Social Security, it slowly and slowly and slowly took in more and more people. So keep this in mind, folks. When we go through some of these things, and you might be sitting there saying, oh, this is never going to impact me. I don't have that much money, or I don't have that much in income. Just remember, the government, folks, is very patient. It never dies. It lives forever. And it is going to get money one way or another. And politicians who are human and can die, just like we can, they know it may not impact us, but it could impact our children or our grandchildren. Or depending on your age, it may not impact you now, but 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 years from now, it may start pulling you in. The government's very patient. Politicians often pass these rules, Chris, where you know it doesn't impact many people at first, and it's like, oh, what harm can that be? It's such a small part of society that's going to have to pay that tax, and I'm never going to be there. But eventually, it starts to suck in more and more and more people. The government is very patient. It never dies. It lives forever. It will get its money sooner or later. So keep that in mind on a lot of these proposals. Just because they don't make it this first go around, I think some of these in here, Chris, is the writing on the wall. Just like they were doing, the abolition of the stretch IRA, as you remember, Chris, made it into many of these proposals before finally becoming law in January of last year. And you're going to see a lot of these here, and it may not make it this round, but it's very revealing of what I feel is coming down the pike. Do you agree or disagree?
Totally agree.
Okay. So let's go through some of these proposals, folks. And what I want Chris to do, because he didn't know these proposals, he didn't read this article, I read it over the weekend, and I thought this will be a good podcast, and we should do this as an EDU show. And what I want, Chris, is you to share your thoughts, your opinions of how this may impact people, especially retirees. Remember, this is the Retirement and IRA show. Let's talk about how it could impact retirees, how it may impact IRA balances, how it may impact our listeners' children when they inherit these IRAs. Don't forget, folks, IRAs are IRD in the eyes of the IRS. Income with respect to a decedent. All you do-it-yourself or Vanguardians, you see assets in your IRA. The government sees income. And keep that in mind when they start talking about people with income at this level or that level are going to have to pay higher taxes. Remember, at the death of the second spouse, they're already going to force your IRA to be closed in 10 years. And I personally feel, even though it's not in this proposal, the 10-year stretch, if you even want to call it a stretch, the 10-year payout period, Chris, I think will revert back to the original 5-year period that it used to be. And we will see that, I guarantee you, over the next 10, 15 years, this 10-year is going to become 5 years where it always was. And the whole reason, listeners, is to force your IRA to be closed quicker and quicker, to force more money out, which will be taxed as income to your beneficiaries sitting on top of their existing income and possibly, at least for a few years, pushing them into brackets where a lot of these new proposals, Chris, may snag them and get more tax revenue. Does that all make sense?
Totally.
Okay. So let's start going through this in no specific order. We're just going to list, or I'll mention what some of them are, Chris, and then we'll give our opinion if we think this is going to happen this go around or later, or maybe not at all. This first one, Chris, we have been saying, you and I have been saying for a while the stretch IRA would go the way of the dodo bird, and it has. We have been saying we felt the step up in basis someday will go that way, but we've also said that they're going to come back with the estate tax. And that is the first one that we are going to review, because that is a part of this proposal. And if you want my opinion, it will make it in this round. Biden has ran on bringing back the estate tax. Bernie Sanders got him to admit he wants the estate tax back, not at the levels Bernie does, which was around $1 million, but the Biden administration is saying, hey, let's reduce the limits to $3.5 million from the current $11.7 million that is currently exempted, which is scheduled to drop to $5 million in 2026, they're proposing dropping it to a $3.5 million exemption right away. So from 11.7, which was supposed to become 5, is now going to drop immediately to $3.5 million. And at the same time, raising the graduated scale of this tax up to 40%. And excuse me, from the current 40% up to, if you're ready for this, Chris, 77% on quote unquote extremely large estates. I do not, because it wasn't shared in this article and I haven't researched what value they describe extremely large estates to be. But I also don't know the graduated scale. Does it go from 40 to 77, or is it 40 to 45 to 50 to 55 to 60 at different graduated levels? So I don't have a lot of the details, but he is proposing increasing the estate tax. And keep in mind, folks, all you Roth fans out there, you can control income taxes, but your Roth will be included for estate taxes. So if they can't get you through income, they'll get you through an estate tax. And I personally feel this is one reason, not only the Democrats under the Biden administration, I think future Republican administrations will also support a continuation of the estate tax, because it allows them, Chris, they sit around looking at the trillions of dollars in Roths and they're thinking, well, we can't tax this outright. We got to come up with another way of taxing it. And what better way, folks, than as you pass that wealth on to future generations? What do you think, Chris, of this estate tax rule, and do you think it would pass?
Oh, I think that the estate tax exclusion amount will be reduced regardless of what's happening. I think that's just too easy compared to the other challenging ways that the government can raise revenues. Despite the political party that's in power, I think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be the devil's in the details. I did a quick calculation at $3.5 million. one of the gotchas, as you described, is sometimes they put these limits in, but they don't index them for inflation. So if that's not an indexed for inflation number, and if we assume that, let's say you had some money that you never touched, it just remained invested, and you never touched it, you never ended up needing it in retirement, and then you left it behind, and you're thinking, $3.5 million, I'll never have that. If you had just $870,000 today, 20 years from now, growing at 7.2%, which I just picked that number out of the air, you'd have $3.5 million. So the point is, you may not find yourself caught up in this net initially, but sometimes you got to look down the road a ways. Now, hopefully they'll index it for inflation, so it'll stay a true $3.5 million or whatever number they end up negotiating, but then it'll adjust for inflation, but it'll adjust for, it's not going to adjust for rate of return inflation, right? You're almost for sure, depending on how you have it invested over a long period of time, going to gain on that limit in real terms. So, but they'll hopefully at least index it for some type of inflation price, whether it's CPI pricing inflation or it's wage inflation. I wouldn't expect them to use that, but you get my idea, you know, you get my meaning that the inflationary treatment of that number is going to make a big difference into how many people get ultimately captured in this.
They usually index it to CPI inflation, right, which is a lot lower, folks, than rate of return appreciation,
right,
meaning every year more and more of your assets will get sucked into the estate tax. And keep in mind, listeners, especially, and Chris is referencing people who may not feel they have $3.5 million right now, the estate tax encompasses everything. The value of the equity in your home, even if it's illiquid. A lot of people have equity in the home, but they can't access it readily, so they don't consider it, Chris, a retirement asset. It's part of your net worth. Any equity in a vacation home or a hunting cabin you may have in the wilds of Minnesota, or a fishing cabin on a lake in Ohio or Kentucky where I may move to. All of these things you may not consider retirement assets because they're illiquid, they're going to get sucked in. Death benefit in your life insurance. You may have a life insurance policy leaving your beneficiaries $500,000, $800,000, $1 million, $1.5 million. It's not necessarily an asset you have. You want to leave a death benefit. The value of that death benefit is sucked into your estate tax calculation. As I already said, your Roth IRA, all the things you own, your jewelry, your bracelets, your gold ring, your wedding ring, everything gets added up, folks, down to the shoes in your closet. And they're going to tax it. And you might get to $3.5 million. I think they will index this. I think it'll be for CPI inflation, not asset appreciation inflation, and more people will get sucked into the estate tax. And it doesn't mean future Congresses and administrations won't lower this number even more or won't raise it eventually again like they have been recently. But y'all have to pay attention. Many, many people listening to this, you do-it-yourselfers, you're Vanguardians, you've
amassed... Fidelitians or Schwabians. We don't want to leave all them out, too.
Who is the other one?
The Fidelitians.
Fidelians.
The Fidelians and the Schwabians.
We got a T. Rowe Pricean finally writing to us
recently.
T. Rowe Pricean, yeah.
There's all
kinds. All you do-it-yourselfers at these large do-it-yourself houses, you've amassed most likely several $1 million. If not more. And I think you have to be paying attention to estate taxes. And do keep in mind, the estate tax sits on top of the income tax that your heirs will pay. Now, granted, under current rules, there is a IRD tax deduction, income with respect to decedent tax deduction. So if your IRAs are subject to IRD, well, they are IRD, but if they are subject to estate taxes, the portion of your estate attributable to IRD items would be deductible on an income tax return. But they are still going to be double taxed initially, then your heirs will have to apply for a deduction. And it's a royal pain. And as Ed Slott points out to us in his course, many people don't even know about this deduction and it goes missed. So this is the mess coming with the estate tax. All right, kind of related to the estate tax, and we're not going to spend much time on this. It would not surprise me if this makes it through, mostly because it's kind of dotting the T and crossing of an I.
Reverse that.
Yes, thank you. But what they want to do is eliminate certain discounting techniques for estate planning purposes. What does that mean in English, folks? A lot of people will create LLCs or partnerships or use like a grantor retained annuity trust. Sometimes crats and cruts, we already talked about those charitable remainder unit trusts and annuity trusts that they fund during their lifetime with money to get it out of their estate. Because once money is placed into a entity or a wrapper, folks, that's illiquid. And I don't mean money. They usually put highly appreciated assets so they don't have to sell them first and incur taxes. So you put something, you paid $500,000 for something, Chris, it grew to $2 million. You have an 11.7 gift and estate tax exemption right now. So before they change the rules, you want to benefit from them because the IRS has already said they will not claw back. Anything that was given under the 11.7 limits today will not be clawed back. Now, it would really stink if they changed their mind on that, but they have given guidance saying we are not going to claw back anything you do. So you could take that $2 million highly appreciated asset, Chris, put it in a grantor retained annuity trust. You could put it in a CRT, a charitable remainder trust. You can put it in sometimes you'll put real estate in a qualified personal residence trust. These are all fancy-dancy trusts, folks.
Family limited partnerships.
FLPs, LLCs, yeah. Absolutely. Once the asset goes inside, which is essentially titling it to the trust or the family limited partnership, it's still yours. You still control it. But once it's inside, folks, it's not readily marketable anymore. It's magic. Yeah. Yeah. You just can't readily sell it anymore. And then people claim, these are very wealthy people claim, well, heck, because I can't readily sell it anymore, it's not worth as much. And they take a discount that can be 30, 40 plus percent of what was put in. They say, hey, yeah, it was worth $2 million, but it's not anymore. Now it's only worth $1.2 million. And they'll argue the point and state the reasons why. Mm-hmm. And when they pass away, magically, there's not $2 million in their estate anymore. There's $1.2 million. So you do that in conjunction with other strategies, and all of a sudden, you can pass millions of dollars on estate tax free. So they're looking at restricting, Chris, some of the discounting mechanisms that are used in these strategies.
Not too many people play around in that pool, but that is something I think all of these things are going to start bubbling back to the surface as far as techniques go, triggered on the first thing we talked about, which is the estate tax exclusion amount being reduced.
Here's my take, though, Chris. Mm-hmm. The estate tax can lure, especially if they lower it to $3.5 million, tons of people in. Most of the people who use the strategy that I just described, not all of them, but most of them are ultra-high net worth people, generally categorized as people with $40 million or more. We're talking about people with $40 million, hundreds of millions, billions of assets. These are the people who readily support politicians on both sides of the aisle. Don't be surprised if this proposal doesn't see the light of day.
Right.
But everyone else, all you little guinea pigs that run over the, not guinea pigs, the lemmings that run over the hills there, they're coming after you. And taking care of this thing that I just described, this discounting mechanism, that's not going to nail you.
No.
But lowering the estate tax, they can get you.
Yeah.
So I'm agnostic on if this second one is going to pass or not. I think the first one definitely will, because it lures more people in and more people who are not the big donors to the idiot politicians on both sides of the aisles. I hate politicians. Okay. So the third one, again, is going to impact so few people. But they're talking about taxing grantor trusts. And this is a strategy. Actually, I think we recently got an email asking if we could talk about GRATs, grantor retained annuity trust or grantor trusts, and how the taxation on estate planning goes. I think I just recently got one. But on these trust folks, these are really advanced trusts, but they're really cool. And if you have a good estate planning attorney, even people of more modest wealth, Chris, $4, $5, $6, $8, $10 million compared to the ultra high net worth people of 40 plus, even more modest wealth could benefit from a grantor trust. But what makes these neat is the grantor who sets them up retains control and is taxed for income tax purposes on them. But at their death, it's not an asset included in their estate. Right. They can control it. They'll pay the income taxes. But again, if the investments inside of the trust are handled correctly, or especially if it's a highly appreciated capital asset, that ain't passing on too much income. So they will continue to pay the income taxes, if any, on the asset, but at their death, it's magically out of their estate, yet they still control it. Sometimes they're called intentionally defective grantor trusts. I'm no way near an expert enough to go any deeper than that.
You're heading down into the weeds on that one, too.
Well, I just want to point out that that's what it is. Yeah. It's a very unique strategy. I like it. I think it's pretty cool. And when we find the new Peter, we'll bring him or her on the show and do a show on grantor trusts. Anyways, they're talking about taxing them differently. This whole notion that you can kind of control the assets still for income tax purposes, but at your death, it's no longer in your estate. Just picture that, folks. You put a highly appreciating capital asset in it, one that may not pay much in income at all, but it's out of your estate, yet you still control it. It's appreciating quickly, and you'll pay any income taxes, but if it's not generating much in income, pretty good there, isn't it, Chris? Almost too good to be true. Mm-hmm. But that's how they work. Again, folks, because this is really a strategy utilized by those ultra high net worth and 100 millionaires and 1,000, well, that would be a billionaire people, and they kind of have politicians in the palm of their hand. Not quite sure if this will see the light of day, but it is an interesting thing that they are doing. Yep. This next one, I don't think, Chris, it's going to happen this go-around. I don't think so. But there is no doubt in my mind, folks, this is going to happen. I have told you the stretch IRA would go away. Did. I've told you the estate tax is going to come back and get more and more people because they are going to lower the limits. Even though it hasn't happened, I think it's going to. This next one, Chris, will happen. I just don't know if the political capital is there to do it right now. One could take the argument that most likely President Biden is not going to be able to serve out his term at all. And we won't get into the reasons why, but if you watch that man for any length of time, you'll know what I mean. And perhaps they will try to get this passed under him since he's going to go out anyways, let him fall. Because this is going to tick off a lot of people who don't quite know yet what it is. But it's the abolishment of the step-up in basis. I know that's going to happen. Again, it was categorized as the biggest loophole in the U.S. tax code. It was started at a time, remember, the government started taxing these things way back 100 years ago now. And back then, Chris, you couldn't track what someone paid for something.
Right.
You often would go to your deceased mom's home or your deceased grandma's home, and you're cleaning it out, and you find gold coins in the drawers. You find stock certificates, Chris. Mm-hmm. There was no online brokerages
right.
or
paper certificates would be in the drawer.
Right,
yeah.
You had an actual paper certificate. And no information on who the broker was, no idea how much she paid, and you got a certificate for 1,000 shares of AT&T, and you had no idea what it was. Well, the government said, look, we get this, so we are going to raise that to the date of death value. Any gain that that decedent had will be wiped out, hence the name step up in basis. Obviously, IRD, income with respect to a decedent, never gets a step up in basis. Why? It's not an asset.
Right.
It is income. Even though you Vanguardians still look at your IRAs as an asset, I say this all the time, it's income. Keep that in mind. We're talking your brokerage accounts, your home, your vacation home, your hunting cottage in Minnesota. All of these types of properties right now escape taxation at your death. They're talking about getting rid of that. I think they will. What do you think?
I think it's just a matter of time. I'm supposing there'll be some sort of carve-outs or exclusions for certain types of assets. I just suspect that because I think there are cases where there's family assets like a family farm or things like that that can create issues that society might want to avoid. So they might carve out some exceptions, but I agree. It's too tempting. It's as they're looking for more tax revenues, it's very contentious to tax everybody by increasing income tax rates. But if you play around with how people who have investments or valuables are taxed on their death, that's, not as many people tend to complain about that. So it's a little bit easier to get through. So I think this is something that is on the eventual list, not the will it or will it not. It's more when will it, kind of like the stretch IRA.
Right.
We weren't sure when it was going to happen, but we were pretty sure it was going to go away.
Right. There's a move also to maybe have us go under the Canadian model. And apparently under the Canadian model, at your death or the death of someone, not necessarily you, but anybody, their assets are deemed, even though they aren't, they're deemed to have been sold on the date of your death. And all the capital gains embedded in that becomes taxable to your estate on the date of your death. And there's talks about doing that. That would essentially solve the same thing, Chris. Gets rid of the step-up in basis. It's just any type of embedded gain on your death in any of your assets is deemed sold, valued at the date of your death, and then taxed to you. So, or to your beneficiary. I'm not quite sure exactly how Canada does it. But in the article, they referenced very similar to the Canadian model, and they made a little blurb about that, which I don't have in front of me. I only have the 12 items. I don't have the entire article. But apparently, that's how they do it in Canada. Again, I'm not a Canadian tax expert, but it makes sense that on your death, your assets are deemed sold and subject to taxes on your last tax return. Kind of makes sense, I guess. But it's just another way for them to get tax revenue that right now they don't get. This is like finding an Easter egg to the government, folks. They don't tax this right now at all. I think this has a very good chance of making it. I just don't know if it's going to make it in this round because it is going to upset a lot of people. I think they'll make a limitation. Any estate valued at more than X amount will not get a step up in basis, and any estate valued more will. So in other words, they can. Also, they need to do is exempt 51% of the population, and then they'll feel happy. But I think all you listeners out there who have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars of value, if not millions upon millions, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 million, you may not feel wealthy, but in the eyes of the government, you are, and they're gunning for you. And right now, they don't get to tax anything, any embedded capital gains. I think this is a no-brainer. It's going to happen. I just don't know if it will happen in this go-around or not. All right, another one that gets really deep, so I am not going to get into it. Limiting the length of the generation skipping tax exemption, especially if you put money in a trust. I don't want to get into what generation skipping tax is. I'm not an expert on it. We will leave that for the new Pete. But they're talking about limiting the term of this possibly to every 50 to 90 years, with the estate tax eventually payable to whatever income beneficiaries are around then. In other words, not letting it go on. The whole purpose of the proposal is to really prevent folks, estates, from building up through these generation skipping trusts tax-free over multiple generations. That eventually it stops, and it's like musical chairs. Who's ever left standing when it stops... Right. They pay the tax.
They get the tax bill.
Right, they get the tax bill. Yeah. So, again, will this pass? I don't know. This one really goes off of higher net worth people for sure. You can see I'm a little cynical. I tend to think the people who actually pay off politicians will be able to keep their pet projects going. But keep your eyes on that. That may become an issue in the future. Anything you want to mention on that? Or?
No, because we need to, if we're going to get through all 12, we don't want to linger too long on these less important ones.
So the next one, I had no idea they were contemplating this, Chris. I could see it eventually passing. It's so hard to say what's going to make it through this round. But reducing the annual gift tax exclusion, which is currently $15,000, per person, $30,000 in the case of a married couple. But limiting that $15,000. Right now, folks, let's say you had five kids. You and you were alone. Let's say you weren't married. You alone could give $15,000 a year to those five kids.
Or anybody else you wanted. It has nothing to do with them being kids.
Right. It doesn't have to be a kid. It could be your favorite podcast host, for instance. Let's say you had five favorite podcast hosts. You could give each one $15,000 a year. You would not have to file a gift tax return. Because keep in mind, folks, the estate and gift tax are one and the same. You, to the government, you can give away, and they never used to be unified, but they are now. You could either give away your money during life or death. They just want to keep a running tally. If they're going to lower the limits to $3.5 million, they don't want you to give away assets every year that keeps your estate below $3.5 million. That would be too easy. Just keep giving money away, don't have an estate more than $3.5 million, then die and the government gets nothing. So they're on to that. So they're going to unify them. And you have to file a gift tax return when you gift money and take your $3.5 million and start reducing it down.
Well, only if you gift above the annual
only
limit.
Only if you gift above the annual limit. But you start tracking that $3.5 million and showing them, hey, I gave away $200,000 here. I bought a house for my child here for $350. I did this. I did that. I did the other thing. And your $3.5 million starts to drop. So you might pass away when you only have $2.5 million of your $3.5 million left. And then they're going to tax anything above that. Well, the government said you can give away $15,000 a year, and that has been steadily increasing all the time. Years ago, when I got into financial planning, it was 10, and then it went to 12 or 11, I forget, and then 13, then 15. So we're at 15 today. And as long as you don't give more than 15 to any one person, or if you're married, you can give 15 to the same five favorite podcast hosts, and your wife or husband could give 15 to the very same five podcast hosts. So each one's now getting $30,000. Mm-hmm. And you guys just took $150,000 from your estate, and magically you don't have to reduce your your lifetime estate tax and gift tax exemption amount at all. Right. And you just parted with $150,000. What they're thinking of doing, Chris, is limiting how much you can give per donee. Donor, to each person who is giving.
Who's giving. Oh, so instead of unlimited people,
you get to you give $20,000 a year or $30,000 a year. Huh. You can give as many people as you want, but if you go over that much, it's not per person, it's per donor. That's one of the proposals. They could get rid of this and just say, no matter what you give, you have to start tracking.
Right.
Or the proposal is listing, as an example, the article said, maybe they would limit it to $20,000 or $30,000 per year, not per person that you're going to give it to, but you and your wife might be limited to just $20,000 or $30,000. That's it. So in the example I gave where one person is giving $75,000 away, as long as they give five people $15,000 under current laws, no reduction of their annual gift tax amount. But if they say to that same person, hey, you can only give $20,000 a year, anything above that, you've got to file a gift tax return and reduce your lifetime limit. That same $75,000 gift to five different people, Chris, would require him to or her, in my example of $20,000 limit, have to say, hey, $55,000 comes off my $3.5 million. Mm-hmm. Follow how they're thinking of doing that?
Yeah, I hadn't heard that one either, but that's an interesting one.
It's an interesting concept. Mm-hmm. Again, folks, we're not saying these are all going to happen and that Biden's going to pass them all. I'm just saying this is very revealing of the way they're looking at things, and in my opinion, what will eventually happen. Most of the proposals that make it into this eventually happen. May take a year, may take 20 years, but this is what they're thinking. This government is in debt up to their eyeballs. They're talking about spending another $3 trillion on now infrastructure and more COVID relief and all this other crap. They need money. They just spent $2 trillion. They're talking about another $3 trillion. They're already running $2 trillion deficits before any of this. This is real money, folks. They need to get more of it. I think this has a very good chance of passing. Again, I don't know when, but this one, I think, is going to see the light of day. Okay, you probably all have heard this, increasing the income taxes on the very, very high. They're talking about raising the current 37% up to 39.6 right away instead of in 2026, January 1st of 2026, when it's scheduled to rise again. So I think that will most likely happen this go around. What do you think?
I agree. Whenever they target a small percentage of people, those usually end up going through, from what I've seen.
And what better way to placate the people who realize their taxes are rising than to say, well, we're nailing the super rich anyways. Right. So it really helps them. Also, for the same upper tier people, they're talking about removing, and I think this will eventually pass again. I don't know when, but I don't think it's going to stay just, Chris, to the upper tier people. They're talking about taxing capital gains as income. And no longer, and this has been bantered around for a while.
Yeah, this has been out for quite a while.
And no longer give people who live on capital gains special tax treatment. This is a tough one to see if it'll make it or not, because the people who benefit the most, most people, most modest to middle to low wealth people, Chris, own their stocks and bonds. Most, not all, own it in always taxable IRA and 401ks where they're already nailed as income. I've mentioned this before, and it is, in my opinion, now, granted, I know a lot of listeners out there have amassed half a million, a million, 2 million and more in brokerage accounts. I know you're there because I've spoken to many of you and many of you work with us. But I can say, in 23 years of doing this, Chris, most people's wealth that we work with, people with about $8 million or less of investable assets and net worth, that's kind of the people who seem to hire us. And if you have 10, 15, 20 million, you might be going after a different style planner. But most of those people have the majority of their equity-based wealth in always taxable accounts, and they're already paying income taxes on it. It is these people with 40 million, 100 million, 200 million, 400 million, a billion and more. It's those people. They, you think putting 50-something thousand in an IRA, excuse me, in a 401k every year is going to help a someone who earns $6 million a year in salary? Hell no. They're the ones who have these massive brokerage accounts. They're the ones who have bought politicians off. So I don't know if this thing is going to make it or not. I think it would be fair, especially if they say if your annual income is above a certain amount. But as you and I spoke on a previous podcast last year, this to me would be the golden get out of jail free card, because these people can just pay themselves $300,000-$500,000 salary and receive everything else as equity-based compensation. And if their salary doesn't go over a certain level, so their income doesn't hit a certain level, they could still get a capital gains treatment and not income tax treatment. So it's too, on this, it all is going to depend, folks, on how they write the rules and how easy it's going to be to manipulate the rules. The people who suffer the most are going to be the people, Chris, who have these massive RMDs that they can't control and maybe have half a million or a million in a brokerage account generating $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of cap gains or dividends that all of a sudden are going to be taxed as income to them because they can't control an RMD, and a multi-billionaire can easily manipulate their income and still receive favorable capital gains taxes.
Yeah, this one's a little tough. There's always the argument that cap gains are generated by you taking risk, where regular income, you're not taking risk, so those shouldn't necessarily be treated the same. That's an argument you didn't happen to make in you know, your description of this issue, but that is always something that I hear people talk about when they're looking at, you know, why is it that capital gains gets this beneficial tax treatment? And it's to encourage investment, which is what makes things work in a capitalistic society like we have today. So I'm sure there'll be people chiming in about that as well. This one, I don't know. This one I honestly don't know the likelihood of this moving through. I could easily see it go either way.
Another one, which we're just going to briefly mention, they want to cap and or eliminate some of the deductions and other benefits that higher net worth people have. They already are subject to that, so they're just talking about expanding that to more. Exactly. That will probably happen, no doubt about that. This one I think will also happen. We've spoken about it on the past. It's nothing that hasn't been banted around before, and that is broaden the current 12.4% Social Security tax on additional incomes beyond the current cap of $142,800 of salary or income a year, and start impacting more people beyond that. Under the Biden proposal, if you earn anything between $142,800 and $400,000 will be exempt from Social Security. Anything above $400,000, the tax comes back. kind of like this
donut hole.
Yeah, kind of like this donut hole thing, and then it comes back. It may start originally that way, folks. Why? It's so easy to say to people, we're only going after them. Then they won't index that for inflation, or a future Congress shortens and shortens the donut hole, or future politicians describe it as now a loophole. Well, this isn't fair. That wealthy person, they have this donut hole where they're not paying anything. That's not fair. We're going to go get them. And then they'll bring it in. So there might be a donut hole originally. It won't stay there forever. Agree? Disagree?
I agree. Even if the donut hole exists in the first place, I do think it's there as a marketing tool, honestly, here, because I've already heard everyone's chattering about, we're not going to raise taxes on anybody under 400,000. Creating this donut hole is the only way for them to have that really be true and not be beat over the head with, oh, but what about the Social Security taxes? You're not being truthful. By doing this donut hole, they can stay more truthful in this claim of not raising taxes for people under 400,000.
Not raising income taxes, folks. Notice they don't say anything about estate taxes or lost step up in bases or anything. They're just saying income taxes, or in this case, Social Security taxes, a payroll style tax. Yep. This next one, I think, may have a good chance. This one's a tough one. It could have a very good chance of passing because any Democrat hates anything to do with Trump. I understand why, but they actually hate anything to do with Trump. They absolutely hate. So speaking of that, the other day, I'm going to divest for one short second. The other day, I came across a new podcast for financial planners offered by Barron's. So I went on to the little podcast thing there in my Apple phone. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, let me look at our podcast. I don't listen to our podcast. I don't look at the reviews anymore or anything. I mean, I don't. I go a very long time. I thought, let me take a look at those. Mm-hmm. And someone gave you a wicked bad review. Now, this person wasn't very smart because I spelled your name wrong again.
Spelled it J-I-M.
J-I-M. I don't understand how they do that.
That's happened several times. I don't understand.
It floors me that people don't know how to spell Chris. C-H-R-I-S. Anyways, they spelled your name J-I-M. And they gave you a one-star review. Mm. And they said, Chris, well, spelt Jim, can't talk and can't pronounce his words. And he sounds like Trump. And I hate Trump, and Trump is dishonest. And he goes, therefore, I hate Jim, and Jim is dishonest. Can you see what they did to you? Can you believe that?
I know. I can't believe that. They were so enraged they couldn't spell correctly.
Their hatred of Trump translated over to you and then ruined their ability to spell clearly. But anyways, folks, my joke is, all aside, put your partisanship aside and your hatred. You're going to hate Chris, because he can't talk. He freely admits he mispronounces words. He accepts that and deals with it and tries. He really tries to spell, pronounce certain words. Mm-hmm. You got to give him credit for trying, right?
And Chris? the sayings, they just get all garbled and jumbled up.
Well, apparently Trump doesn't gobble up his sayings because this guy really hated you because you can't pronounce certain words like Trump. Okay. But anyways, back to this tax proposal. This tax proposal was a pet project of Trump. So I really think the Democrats are going to try to get rid of this because Trump liked it. Even if this is a good thing and does good, and I'm not saying it does. I think there's a lot, personally, I think there's a lot of nefariousness in this and a lot of dishonesty in it. But even if it worked, they don't care. Their hatred and blindness against that man is such where I think this may go through. And that is getting rid of Chris Opportunity Zones, that big tax deduction, real estate tax-free type thing that you could do under the Tax Cuts and Job Act that the Republicans and Trump signed. Mm-hmm. They're talking about getting rid of Opportunity Zones.
I think they kind of put them in there without a lot of people noticing. And I also think it could be taken out without a hell of a lot of people noticing. I mean, there were clearly people that promoted it initially to get it put in
there. You don't hear much about them.
You don't. You just don't hear. There's not a. This isn't a headline item. This isn't a a podcast item. Typically, this isn't those types of things. So I think this will be easy for those in power to change if they want to. So I suspect this one might be on the chopping block.
This next one, kind of related, but also related to the step up in basis. This one surprised the hell out of me. I don't think it will see the light of day again, folks, for one big reason. The people who own politicians are so frickin' wealthy. They have tons and tons and tons of their billions tied up in real estate. And they will be P.O.'d at the Democrats if they pass this. I was surprised this was in the proposal. Do you have any idea what it might be?
Maybe something to do with depreciation?
No.
In real estate? No.
Get rid of 1031 real estate Ooh. Exchanges.
I hadn't heard that one.
Eliminate. Not reduce. Eliminate tax-free exchanges of real estate under Section 1031.
Wow. This does go hand in hand with the estate tax issue because
they're going to get it sooner or later. Because right now the trick is, folks, you keep 1031-ing real estate. 1031, right. For those who don't know, you buy a piece of property. You can't do it with your home. God forbid the middle class and modestly wealthy people can benefit from this. You instead buy rental homes or other types of real estate property. Buildings, hospitals, schools. Well, you can't buy a school. But anyways, you're buying other things and you want to get rid of it. You sell it. And if you follow certain rules, you can quote unquote reinvest it into another bit of real estate and keep that gain from being taxed.
Right.
You can even put it in a Delaware trust, which we won't get too deep into on this show, but it would allow you to get out of the ownership of individual real estate, kind of pass the management on to other companies who are going to pool your assets and manage it differently and handle everything, and you get to collect a nice rent check, so to speak, every month or every quarter, and your real estate passes into the trust 100% tax-free, and when you finally die, your kids get it fully tax-free right. because of the step-up in basis. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know if this one is going to pass because there's going to be a lot of uber-rich people mm-hmm. who are going to be ticked off, but can also write massive checks to politicians or their PACs. That's how they can get around it. Might massive checks that represent a fraction of what it would cost them in taxes, Chris, if this ever became the light of day, pretty much the cost of doing business, if you will. They could write massive checks and buy the politicians off, and this doesn't see the light of day. But I was really surprised that was in there. Hmm. Okay. The next two.
I thought there was only 12. Isn't that 12?
Well, some of the ones that I read were considered one, even though I made them sound like two.
Oh.
So two okay. more real quick ones.
Okay.
The first one, I think both of these will eventually make it. I just don't know when. One of them, Chris, is a blast from the past that I have spoken of before with respect to IRAs. Any idea what you think it is?
You've said so much about IRAs in the past. So this has to be related to taxation of IRAs.
Mm-hmm. A blast from the past.
I don't know.
Well, we'll start with the other one first. This one is a pet project of the hell is her name? She ran for she was running against Biden, the one who thinks she's an Indian even though she's not. What the hell's her name?
Elizabeth Warren.
Elizabeth Warren. Mm-hmm. This is a pet of Elizabeth Warren. A wealth tax. That is actually in the proposal. I don't know if it's going to make it. this round, but I think eventually it will. It's where you will pay not an income tax, folks, just owning an asset. They're going to tax your wealth every year. You're going to have to file a report, list what your total net worth is. Remember, if they audit you and they find you're lying, that's when they'll nail you. So they hope that you're going to be honest. And then if your wealth is above a certain level, imposing a 1 or a 2% annual, not a one-time.
Right. This is different than an estate tax, which is at the end. This is
right. This is just ongoing.
Yeah.
So the wealth tax is in his proposal. This is a pet of Elizabeth Warren and a few other uber liberal Democrats. I think this will see the light of day. I just don't know if it'll see the light of day in this proposal. But again, this government needs money, and income taxes only take them so far. These are other ways. It's like finding candy to them. It's just other ways of getting revenue. But the last one, I think this may make it, not this go around. It's a blast from the past that went away in 1997, I believe it was. Still any idea yet, Chris? 1997 was right around the time yours truly was taking the Certified Financial Planner's exam. And when this law got changed, I was ecstatic because the CFP board announced they were removing any references to this from the CFP exam. And the reason I was ecstatic is I never quite understood it. I always thought it was so unethical and ridiculous. I didn't understand how to determine it. It was confusing to me because I didn't quite understand required minimum distributions. But what it was, folks, back in the up to the late 90s, I took my exam, I believe, in 97. So it got abolished somewhere around 96, 97. There was a tax called the success tax. If your required minimum distribution was bigger than this arbitrary number the government had created,
right,
by monitoring the size of your RMD, folks, they could reverse the math and figure out what, Chris? How big your IRA was.
Right, exactly.
So in their minds, if you had created wealth inside an IRA greater than some politician or bureaucrat thought was, quote unquote, fair. Yeah,
enough for retirement.
Yeah, you don't need any more than that.
Yeah.
And if you got more than that, screw you. You pay more. So they imposed a 15% surtax on top of your required minimum distribution, on top of the income taxes you already paid. They're talking about bringing that damn thing back and basing it the same way. If your IRA's RMDs are greater than a certain amount, imposing a surtax on the damn thing.
As popular as Roths have become, this is going to be a tough one for them, I think, because there's a very much an unfair balance in kind of this penalty or surtax between those embracing Roths and those not in Roths because of the obvious RMD calculation issue here. And so I think this is going to be tough.
And how would they marry that to the wealth tax?
Yeah.
You can't be taxed twice, or at least they never did before. So if you're going to give me a surtax on my RMD, how can you also force me to use that IRA in my wealth tax?
Yeah.
That's why I think a lot of these proposals are thrown in there just to stew around in there. I doubt this wealth tax on the large RMDs will see the light of day right now, but I would not be surprised 15, 20 years from now, folks, this sees the light of day again. It used to be there, and they would just base it on the size of your required minimum distributions, which can figure out every year because of the 5329s that are reported to the IRS all the time. They know the value of your IRAs. They know how to factor in your RMDs. They know what you're supposed to take out. And again, it's a way, in my opinion, to punish people who were successful. They're not going after the 51% who vote these idiots in, who may have been mediocre their entire lives or may have just never had any ambition.
Well, it isn't even just success. It's more those who are dedicated to saving. I mean, there's a lot of people that make a lot of money and
true,
are successful
and,
they don't
right.
save. So it's really savers, which is something United States citizens don't save enough. So anything that punishes saving, I have a real problem with. We should be encouraging saving, not discouraging it, which is what something like this would tend to do.
And that's why someday you might see the VAT tax, which again was not in this proposal, mm-hmm. at least right now, value-added tax, otherwise known as the national sales tax. But it's not a line-item sales tax. Government's too smart for that. The state and local governments, they're idiots. It is the Fed government, they're too smart. They're going to say, we're just going to tax the manufacturer if they take a piece of raw material or anything and add value to it in their manufacturing process. We're going to tax that change of value. So if they create a widget and added value and sold it to another company who then combines it with another widget and creates more value, it gets taxed throughout the whole manufacturing process. As everyone knows, companies don't pay sales taxes, don't pay income taxes. People do. They ain't going to pay the value-added tax. It's just going to get added to the value of that good, hence the name value-added tax. That's not in this proposal, but I think it will happen. But this success tax one really surprised the hell out of me that someone somewhere thought this was a wonderful idea. Let's bring it back. But I agree with you.
I think some of these they're proposing so that they can give them up and say, see, we compromised.
Yeah, we gave up this and this.
But in the back of their mind, they're thinking, yeah, we put these crazy things in here.
Or
they could be sacrificial lambs as part of this process.
Right, or a way to say to the masses, look, here's everything we were thinking of doing. We only did four of them.
Right.
You should be happy.
Right.
So don't get mad at us. Be glad, or we'll come back and do these other eight.
Yeah.
But anyways, folks, it's telling. And the reason I wanted to do this, and we're going to wrap it up now, tax planning is something everyone needs to pay attention to. Do keep in mind the majority of people here listening, Chris, and you know this because Chris does the planning in the office now, folks. Yours truly doesn't. I used to do it. I stopped over about a year ago now. Chris and I agreed my position at the firm needs to change, and I'm trying to run it more and make it more efficient. Of course, I had my medical issues all in the middle of this, so it's not moved as fast as I wanted it to. But Chris does the planning here, and he will be the first to tell you, you're entering a different phase of your life. Stop looking at your finances through the eyes of an accumulation wealth gatherer and start looking at your finances the way they are now evolving. It is deferred spending. You are going to start consuming your assets. And it's not about growing them. It's not about asset allocation anymore. I know you all think this is great. All you do-it-yourselfers really enjoy this analysis and your little Vanguard forms and chatting away about what you're buying and what you're selling. That's not retirement planning. If you want to add true value to me and advise, especially if you're working with an investment advisor with a distribution portfolio, if he or she is not embedding tax planning into what they're doing for you, if all what they're doing is managing your money and taking 1.25%, 1.5% of your assets every year, and they're patting themselves on the back and telling you how wonderful they've grown your wealth, well, that's not too hard to do when the market's just rising. Don't even get me going on if they're benchmarking you or not to allow you to measure the success or failure that they're doing. But if they're not encompassing taxes and looking at taxes and factoring in how to reduce your taxes, to me, Chris, you're not getting your money's worth. An advisor, especially to a distribution client, can add more value by controlling taxes than managing assets.
Right. And if you can find through a certain straightforward strategy a way to not pay a certain amount of taxes, that is actual, real additional spending that you or your family can enjoy. Not a hope to get a return kind of a situation that may or may not work out. If you just make certain, take certain steps or make certain plans and do things in a certain order in certain years, those types of things, you can add more spendable wealth to your situation. That's what Jim's talking about. So it gets ignored. There's just not as much attention paid to that as the really sexy, let's see if we can beat Wall Street kind of attitude. So many movies. Think about how boring the movie would be if it was about the Wolf of Wall Street wasn't about investing. It was more about how we're going to save you on taxes. Not a very exciting story. So they just don't get any headlines. But that's real dollars that can be saved, and you just got to pay attention to these things.
And the one thing I tell all clients when I speak with them, and Chris tells more clients this now because he speaks with more. I speak with most initial meetings in an effort to determine if someone's going to be a good fit for our firm or not, or if we're going to be a good fit for them or not. But one thing I tell all those people all the time, Chris, is that tax planning needs to be done continually because the laws change constantly. So tax planning is an ongoing, lifelong endeavor for most people. Even when you get into your late 70s, all through your 80s, maybe into your 90s if you live that long, you need to have a team member on board, a planner. I know a lot of you do-it-yourselfers hate planners. But who's going to do this for you as you age and you lose your ability to do it yourself? You lose your interest in it. You lose your ability to understand it like you once did. You lose your ability sometimes, unfortunately, to understand anything, not just your finances. Who's going to be keeping their eyes out for you? That's where a good planner comes in and a good retirement plan. And a retirement plan isn't just crunching data. It is incorporating your spending, your investing, your taxes, your estate, your inheritance, your aging plan. All these separate little plans have to be looked at and monitored every year, continually. You've got to embrace this and have people helping you because these are just 12 more, well, technically 14 more changes that they're bantering about. They're not all going to pass. But some of them will, and 2-3 years from now, Chris, more will happen. Mm-hmm. And 2-3 years after that, more will happen. And you've got to be tracking and seeing how that impacts you. Because you might be able to save 20, 30, 40% of your wealth from going to the government, who's only going to blow it on stupid things or give it to pet projects that have nothing to do with what you did. The law says you have to pay your fair taxes. It does not say you need to pay more than what you have to. And that's where you can do some tax mitigation strategies. All right.
Well, that being said, we want to thank everybody for listening in on another Retirement and IRA Show EDU edition. Not sure the topic next week, but we've got a few things brewing, and I'm sure they'll be of interest to at least a couple of you out there. Again, if you have questions for a Q&A show, feel free to send those in, either emailing Jim directly at jim@jimhelps.com or go to the website jimhelps.com. That's Jim, HELPS.com. There's a contact form on there you can fill out, or like I said, you can email him directly. And we really enjoy your questions. We really enjoy the fact that you listen in and hopefully find some value in what we share with you.
Even those of you who don't like that Chris mispronounces his words and is distrustful like Trump.
Yeah. We can't please everybody all the time.
No.
We'll say that.
But do remember, folks, Chris is spelled C-H-R-I-S.
That is true. That is true.
Not J-I-M. Get that straight.
Okay. Well, thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week with another show.
You have listened to Jim on the radio, read his quotes in the media, and enjoyed his banter on iTunes. But even now, you may wonder what sets Jim Salmier and Associates apart from other financial planning companies. The answer is quite simple. Jim's diverse team of professionals specializes in retirement planning. They form a lifelong relationship with you and measure their success not through product sales, but through the security and prosperity you may achieve in your retirement. Jim's entire team shares his unwavering commitment to placing their clients' best interests first while offering their services at fair prices with full disclosures. The professionals at Jim Saulnier & Associates are available to assist you with your retirement planning needs. Visit jimhelps.com to schedule your complimentary coffee and a second opinion meeting. That's Jim, H-E-L-P-S.com. Or call 970-530-0556.
The Retirement and IRA Show represents the words and views of the show hosts exclusively and should not be construed as investment, legal, or tax advice. All information is believed to be from reliable sources. However, we make no representation as to its completeness or accuracy. All economic and performance information is historical in nature and is not indicative of any future results. Any indices mentioned on the show are unmanaged and cannot be invested indirectly. Diversification and asset allocation strategies do not assure profit or protect against loss. Never make any investment or financial decisions based on information offered on this show without first consulting your financial, legal, or tax advisor. Financial planning services offered through Jim Saulnier & Associates, LLC, a registered investment advisor.